And welcome back to Current State for Tuesday. This is our first visit with you live since Christmas. And throughout the hour today, we're going to be revisiting some of the segments that we felt kind of rose to the top here for 2015. And we're going to be revisiting a trip Kevin Lavery took up to the Mackinac Straits. He was up there for a drill by the Enbridge Oil Company, whose Line 5 runs through the Mackinac Straits, of course, and over which many people are concerned about the possibility of an oil spill up there and what that would mean. He was up there for the drill that Enbridge conducted, in terms of its readiness and how prepared it is to deal with any kind of spill up there. And that and more. Joshua Davis returns here from earlier in the year before the hour is through. And April Van Buren joins me here now. We like to bring you the daily local and state news that you need every day, but we like to dabble in the quirky occasionally. And April is here to tell us about one of her favorite pieces of the year that falls into that category. Hi, April.
Hi, Mark. So when I was thinking about the stories that I had the most fun working on this year, the piece about Little Darlin's Vaudeville immediately came to mind. This is a vaudeville troupe in Lansing that combines the old-timey aesthetic of vaudeville with sort of a modern sense of humor. And they put on a variety show with everything from fire dancers to ventriloquists, so the quirk factor is definitely there.
Wow. What was your favorite part of putting this one together?
Well, it was really fun to talk to the show's creators. Ben and Katie Kaur are just really passionate about what they're doing, and they've been able to create a community of performers and fans that have really bought into this vision. And as someone who hasn't lived in Lansing that long, it's really fun to see the quirkier, non-political side of the capital city.
It's out there for sure. We'll set the scene for us. What are we about to hear?
So I interviewed Ben and Katie and some of the other Little Darlin's performers at a rehearsal before an upcoming show. And so we start out in the basement of an East Lansing church. It's a Sunday afternoon in a church basement in East Lansing. Around a dozen members of Little Darlin's Vaudeville are rehearsing for an upcoming show.
Welcome to Vaudeville. Vaudeville is incredible, you know.
Music director David Klein leads the Heartland Klezmorum Band as they conjure up that old-timey sound you're listening to.
Rooms were made for coffins, towers made for spires, ships were made for cannonades to fire up from inside them.
There's a lot to take in. There are singers on stage, a contortionist twisting her body into shapes that you should not try at home, and a woman swirling batons of fire in the middle of the room. But as busy as the scene is today, Ben Kaur says audiences can expect to see even more variety at their show this Saturday in Lansing.
It's a lot of terrible jokes, a lot of really amazing variety performers, magician, juggler, hula hooper, there'll be fire, you know, an amazing live band. There will be no lip syncing, nothing is fake, everybody does their own stunts.
Ben and his wife Katie are the co-founders of the Little Darlin's Vaudeville Show. And they're part of a growing number of performers who are trying to revive this classic American art form.
Nobody knows vaudeville, and that just blows my mind because everything that we know today had its roots in vaudeville.
Katie says before movies, before television, before radio, there was vaudeville. The live variety show established itself as America's most popular form of entertainment around the late 19th century.
And the great thing about that time in history, I'm specifically talking about during the melting pot era, is that it was for the first time anywhere in the world, all these people are coming together in this one country, and they're bringing all their cultures and their traditions and their art and their music with them. And everybody is just thrust together. And I mean, just how cool is that to go to a show and be able to see an exhibit of the world, whatever culture you came from.
As immigrants from across the world landed on American shores, many found they could make a decent living traveling the vaudeville circuits. David Klein says that diverse history is part of what makes vaudeville so special.
Every group had vaudeville. There was a Yiddish theater, Yiddish vaudeville. There was people who were Italian had their own vaudeville, Irish vaudeville. So everybody had their vaudeville.
The seed for this vaudeville troupe was planted years ago when its founders were still in high school. Katie borrowed, well, stole, a book of old vaudeville sketches from her theater director's desk. After graduation, Ben and Katie moved to Chicago to pursue careers in acting. They moved back to Lansing after Katie got pregnant, but the itch to perform stuck around. And so did that book of vaudeville sketches.
We finally came to the point where we were like, okay, we should think about doing this, and we just need an excuse to do it.
Their first show was organized as a benefit for Earthwork Music in 2009. And Katie said she thought that first show would probably be the last.
It was meant to be just a one-time event, but it continued in spite of us. Everybody just wanted to continue to be involved, continue to make things and create new ideas. And so I don't really think we had a choice at one point but to keep going.
6 years later, the group now boasts around 30 performers on its roster, ranging from fire eaters to comedians to jugglers from all across Michigan. Kristen Fintner is one of those performers.
And in the vaudeville show, I go by Cheeky Darlin'.
After starting out as the group's stage manager, she's gotten the chance to play some pretty interesting roles.
It's one of those things that when they come up with a bright idea, if it's something that's going to be kind of embarrassing or super silly, that's usually the kind of thing that I get assigned to.
She's been a dancing palm tree, a dancing cactus, a child psychiatrist in footy pajamas and pigtails.
We also did a skit that had to do with tampons, and I came out on stage dressed like just a human tampon. It was hilarious.
Kristen says the logistics of getting 30 people from all across the state together for rehearsals can be a little challenging, but they manage.
What's nice is everyone's very flexible, so that works out really well for us.
You have a contortionist, so some people are physically flexible.
Yes. Yes, literally, some people are very flexible, but then time-wise as well.
And in the end, all the little puzzle pieces seem to fall into place. That's thanks in large part to the hard work and vision of the show's directors. It's a vision that Katie and Ben are constantly tweaking, sometimes up until the day of.
We come up with these, like, ridiculously grand ideas that sort of have to get scaled down to reality to figure out, like, okay, what can we actually fit on stage? What can we actually fit in our trailer? What can we, you know, actually bring?
If you've ever caught one of their shows, you know that Little Darlin's manages to fit a lot onto one stage. Their sets are bright and elaborate, and there's no shortage of props either. Katie says it takes everyone pitching in to make all the little details of the show come together.
We have work nights at our house where there's just like feathers and glitter and crap all over our floor and just people working, and it's 2 a.m. and we're all delirious, but we're having a great time.
Aside from coordinating schedules, building sets, and making costumes, Little Darlin's has another challenge: how to translate a 19th and 20th century art form into 21st century entertainment. Ben says it's important to the group that their performances stay true to vaudeville's roots, but they also want to make them relevant to modern audiences.
We want to give people the feel of vaudeville, but not be like, get in our time machine, welcome to the 1920s.
Katie and Ben write and produce all their own sketches, which occasionally include things like text messaging, hashtags, or internet memes.
And I think that it's important to incorporate certain things that are happening in our time, because that's what it was. That's what it was. I mean, it was a place where there was political satire, there was all sorts of stuff that was pertinent to the people of the time. And so we do still need to incorporate some of that to make it true vaudeville.
At vaudeville's height, around 1928, there were an estimated 2 million people a day going to performances across the country. But as movies started to incorporate sound and the Great Depression dried up people's disposable income, it started to disappear. Movie theaters took the place of old vaudeville houses, and stars like Buster Keaton and Bill Robinson made their way from stage to screen. But Katie says she thinks the time could be ripe for a vaudeville revival.
I've kind of been thinking that things are cyclical, you know? So we went through this whole phase of live. Everything was live right there in front of you. And then we went to radio, and that was huge. And then there was movies and TV. And I kind of feel like people are just tapped out. It's like live, real, genuine, can see it, touch it, smell it, feel it. That is a novelty.
And when you think about it, vaudeville kind of is the perfect form of entertainment for the modern era. Its rapid pace and over-the-top visuals seem tailor-made for our Twitter-length attention spans. And if anything can keep you from checking your smartphone every 5 minutes, it's probably a stage full of fire eaters, hula hoopers, and a giant pink papier-mâché elephant head. For Current State, this is April Van Buren.
its current state on 90.5. Last July, a state task force in Michigan issued a report on an aging oil pipeline that runs beneath the Straits of Mackinac. Enbridge Energy's Line 5 was built in 1953. Many people in Michigan are concerned about the safety of the line. It was an Enbridge pipeline that burst near Marshall in 2010, creating one of the worst inland oil spills in U.S. history. The fear of a similar disaster in the Straits of Mackinac has prompted some to demand that Enbridge shut down Line 5. In September, the company ran a drill on the Straits to simulate their response to an oil spill, and current state's Kevin Lavery had a front row seat for the exercise. Kevin, what was that day like for you?
First of all, Mark, it started with a very early wake up, not unlike today, doing Morning Edition. I drove up to St. Ignace that morning to catch the 9 a.m. start time, so that's 4 hours from Lansing, so you can do the math there. Most of what I saw was from a distance, and again, this being a drill, you had to kind of use your imagination to picture what it would really take to contain an oil spill. However, though, I can say that I was able to talk with Enbridge company officials and some of their contractors very freely about the what-if scenarios. And the great part of that trip, Mark, was that instead of spending a day looking at a lot of maps and charts, I was out on the water for some of this, watching people and equipment in action.
1 mile north of the Mackinac Bridge, Enbridge officials welcomed dozens of reporters and dignitaries to St. Ignace to watch its team prepare for its own worst-case scenario, an oil spill in the Straits of Mackinac. Enbridge CEO Al Monaco began the day with an admission.
One thing that I get asked most often in my job is that, you know, what is it exactly that keeps me up at night and the rest of our team? And by far, the most important thing is an incident that could happen that affects either the public, our own people, or of course, the environment. So today we're focused on emergency response, but the key point and key driver of our safety program is to make sure that we're preventing incidents before they happen.
Enbridge operates twin pipelines beneath the Straits. They carry more than 22 million gallons of natural gas and light crude through the region every day. The imagined scenario for the day was a 4,500-barrel oil spill, roughly 189,000 gallons. The lines run through the Huron side of the Straits, between the bridge and Mackinac Island. We boarded a ferry and made for the site to watch the drill. On board, I met Charles Usher, an Enbridge contractor. He's the president of Marine Pollution Control Corporation, based in Detroit.
And so we're here to help support the response effort. We brought in various pieces of equipment, non-water resources from Detroit, a vacuum barge, which we'll see at Mackinac Island, a boom boat, which helps deploy and recover boom and skimmers. We'll be deploying some skimmers from the barge itself, and also a skimmer that's in the harbor at Mackinac. Also a skimmer out on the water from a tugboat that we've chartered from Riva Marine in Sheboygan.
On the upper deck, we gaze out at two boats in the distance. One is a tugboat, the Rochelle K out of Sheboygan. The other is the U.S. Coast Guard buoy tender, the Alder, homeported in Duluth, Minnesota. Charles Usher gives a play-by-play.
Do you see the boom that's being towed by the smaller boat? It's basically in a J configuration. It's tied to the aft of the tugboat, and at the end is, we'll see in a minute when we come around, is a skimmer in the water. And as that skimmer runs, you can see the yellow square thing at the back of the tug. That's the power pack that operates the pump and the hydraulics that operate the rotating brushes on the skimmer. Looks like they've got about a 50-foot length of boom. And so you're basically driving it at the slick to contain it inside the boom and alongside the vessel and ultimately be slurped up by the brushes on the skimmer.
If a spill took place on a day like this one, partly cloudy skies, about 64 degrees, fairly light wind, the recovery process might not be too difficult if it began quickly. But a spill in September would look nothing like the damage in December if an underwater break were to strike in the dead of winter.
How does all this change when there's 4 feet of ice cover?
It makes it quite a bit more difficult to find and to recover. That's a big area of study and research and planning exercises right now within the Coast Guard and the EPA and in the oil industry. I mean, you know, they finally just allowed drilling up in Alaska for shell in the outer continental shelf there in Prudhoe area. But that was all held up for years, specifically because of the design of the oil spill response vessel and how it was going to combat oil in ice-infested waters. You know, and who knows what's going to happen with ice, with the weather and the planet and all that stuff. We're getting less and less over time, but we still get plenty of it here.
And that's the concern on the minds of lawmakers like Senators Peters and Stabenow, as well as some environmentalists who'd rather see Enbridge dismantle the pipeline altogether. Graham White is a spokesman for Enbridge.
We know that there are people out there that have the view that this line has is in a place that is quite risky, and we want to hear that. We understand that, and that's why we take such extensive measures over and above regulatory requirements and to our own very high standards and what we feel are the standards of the community in order to ensure the safety of this line.
One particular group, the Sierra Club chapter of Michigan, has advocated for Enbridge to completely shut down Line 5 by this December.
Sure, and I think the problem with that is that this is an essential service that we're talking about. So, I mean, it's like electricity or anything else. It's something that people absolutely rely on for many, many crucial aspects of their daily life, including heating their homes and providing transportation and getting goods to market and manufacturing. So it's not realistic at this point for us to be interfering with that vital service to so many people in Michigan that depend on it.
Back on land, we're driven to a site to the west of the bridge along the Lake Michigan shore. Here, crews are practicing setting up their containment equipment. It's a sensitive, marshy zone that demands a delicate step. Jim Schott is an assistant supervisor with Enbridge based in Marshall, the site of the 2010 river spill. He's adorned in dark sunglasses, a white safety helmet, and fluorescent yellow vests. He's part of a team positioned along the bank, spreading out what's essentially a long, low wall of hard synthetic plastic. It's a boom, the barrier meant to stop the slick from hitting the sand. Schott leads us down a makeshift plywood ramp to the skimmer sitting a few feet offshore. It's a rectangular metal box with two large spinning cylinders on top. This is the heart of the cleanup operation.
Basically what the rotating drum does is it picks product up. There are squeegees on the back side of it that we can't see right here. It squeegees the oil off the drums. The oil migrates around the outside to the back where our vacuum hose and truck sucks the product up into the truck.
Air pressure coming from the truck, air pressure going back into the truck.
Basically, yes.
By late afternoon, the exercise was wrapping up. All told, some 500 people took part in the drill. About half were field crews. The other half had been stationed at the incident command post in St. Ignace. There, Enbridge monitored the activities alongside the Coast Guard, the EPA, and a handful of state environmental agencies. The drill had been months in the making, though it was timed to follow just 3 weeks after Enbridge signed an agreement with the state of Michigan. In it, the company promised never to ship heavy crude oil through the Straits of Mackinac. Some critics have dismissed the move as window dressing, unconvinced that Enbridge is capable of preventing a spill on the Straits. For Current State, I'm Kevin Lavery.
We've had many musical highlights from 2015 on Current State, but nothing generated quite the buzz that former Lansing resident Joshua Davis did when he appeared and performed on the show back in June. Current State's Scott Pohl plays a key role in all of our live music segments. He joins us now. Remind our listeners what kind of 2015 Joshua Davis had, Scott.
Quite a year for Joshua Davis this year, and big fun having him on the show. It was a year many mid-Michigan music fans won't forget, Mark. Joshua is a former member of the Lansing band Steppin' In It, and thousands of Michiganians became wrapped up in his string of successes on the NBC TV show The Voice back in the spring.
And his run on the show culminated back in May with his performance in the finals. He finished third overall. Then on Friday, June 26th, he got booked into the Wharton Center And it was so good of Joshua because he was scheduled to perform that night. But that morning, he joined us here in Studio S on Current State. My first question for Joshua Davis was about how hard he's worked to become a respected musician and performer.
I've been a full-time, you know, performing songwriter for over 15 years. And that's, I think, you know, before then I'd spend, you know, all day just sitting in my room playing and trying to write songs. And I think that...
It can be a very solitary experience.
Yeah,
but it's almost
yeah.
like you have to get with other people and to make something really special.
But I think that... you know, you gotta get tempered by the road in a lot of ways. I think that playing out and playing in front of people is the best rehearsal in the world.
From our perspective, Joshua, it's easy to assume some profound change has taken place because of your exposure on this TV program. Has it? Is there a life before The Voice and a life after The Voice?
You know, my career leading up to The Voice was incredible. You know, I was making a living as a musician, which doing something that I love, which I feel really, really grateful for. I've always felt incredibly grateful for. My family, you know, has always been a huge support in that respect. And the community, you know, especially here in Michigan and in the Midwest, has been an incredible support all over these 15 years. The television show has been really interesting. It was an interesting adventure. It was an incredible learning experience. And yeah, the exposure is amazing. And I think that day by day here, we're finding out what it means and what the next few months and few years are going to look like. And it's exciting. The key, in my opinion, is to kind of maintain the integrity and maintain the kind of focus on kind of championing the music scene that we have here in Michigan, because it is a unique and it's an incredible music scene, and to represent that on a national basis and on national television, especially, it was a great honor for me. And so that's really important to me, you know, moving forward is to take all these opportunities and to move into this kind of new realm, but also to be you know, maintaining you know, what I've been doing for so many years, and to be championing the community that we have here.
Did you have to work hard to persuade the folks at The Voice to let you perform your own songs, or did you get pressure to perform, you know, Stevie Wonder songs or whatever the case may be?
You know, it was a constant battle. It's that's the big thing on the show is song choice, and I think that and there's kind of two different realms there. And for me, you know, a lot of people are interested in winning. I never went into the show thinking that I would win the show, and it wasn't ever something that was on my mind. The thing that what was always on my mind was kind of maintaining integrity and doing what I do and not going too far from what I've developed over these 15 years. And the times that I did stray too far from that are the times that I didn't do so well on the show. So it kind of showed that if I'm myself, then that's what people respond to. And to play the Working Man's Hymn, to play my original song on the show was the biggest battle of the show. It was really, really difficult to convince them that was a good decision. And for me, that was the big win.
Tom in Delhi Township, do you ever? I mean, he also comments on how poetic the words to your songs are. Do you ever write poetry just for its own sake, or does everything that you write in terms of words manage to find its way into a song?
No, it's all lyrics. You know, I think there's very few people that can bridge that gap between poetry and lyric writing. Leonard Cohen's one of them. My wife is a poet, and she's a great writer, and she's taught me a lot about poetry and about kind of economy of words and about editing and really working hard on your craft. And that's something that, so yeah, there's aspects of poetry that I use in my craft and when I'm writing, the kind of craft of songwriting and the craft of poetry, are similar in that stage, but the content I think is quite a bit different.
We're pleased to have Joshua Davis with us in the studio today to perform a few times and to talk about his life post The Voice on NBC TV. What are we going to hear here, Joshua?
I'll play a song called Goodbye, Betsy Brown.
Goodbye, cry, sweet little baby, between the heavens and the sea. A gentle wind shall bear me home, and I'll soon lie down with thee. The wind, the leaves have lost their color and lie scattered in the field. So then I'll come a-calling, I'll lay down my sword and shield. Oh, I'll lay down my sword and shield. Fare thee well, oh, Joe Clark, and goodbye, Betsy Brown. My little girl lies across the sea, and I'm going to leave this town. For a ring, love, I trade my heartache for your hand. I wipe the cobwebs from this old guitar and play Joe Clark in a riverboat band. So leave a key upon your doorstep, save me room within your heart. I have not forgotten you. These years we've been apart. Whoa, whoa, these years we've been apart. Fare thee well, oh, Joe Clark. Goodbye, Betsy Brown. My little girl lies across the sea, and I'm going to leave this town. Don't you cry, sweet little baby. Well, baby, don't you cry. Whoa, 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 whoa. Leave a key upon your doorstep. Save me room, wait, save me room, wait.
All of us want to wish you a happy new year from everybody at WKAR and at Current State. We will be back on Monday for another year. We're nearing the beginning of our fourth full year of this program on WKAR. Our executive producer is Peter Worf. April Van Buren directed our show today. Thanks as well to Scott Pohl, Katie Cook, Kevin Lavery, Jamie Paisley, and Drew Hill. We are a podcast as well. Remember that. Get Current State delivered straight to your smartphone every morning. Just subscribe on iTunes, Stitcher, or wherever you get your podcasts. We're on Twitter at KAR Current State. Find us on Facebook at Current State from WKAR. Enjoy the day. I'm Mark Bayshore. You've been listening to Current State here on WKAR.